It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on News Talk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
And welcome to the weekend. I'm the president and CEO of Sandler Training for Idaho, Jim Stevens. Each week, I invite a keynote Sandler trainer from all around the world to discuss strategies that will help you improve behavior, attitude, and techniques in your life using the proven methodologies from the world-renowned and highly successful Sandler Training System. This week, my guest is Marcus Kauke. Marcus is from England, actually Reading, England, just west of London. Marcus, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Marcus has been on the show before. He's famous for a couple of things. One, his daughter, Anna. If you are interested in prospecting calls, you owe it to yourself to go to YouTube, do a keyword search for cold calling is child's play, and you'll get to hear his daughter conduct a cold call. I think it was her first ever, or at least her first day.
Age 11.
And she just does a masterful job. And it really proves that prospecting is about following a system. And I think the advantage Anna has, Marcus, is that she doesn't have all the head trash the rest of us have. She's just having fun doing it.
Well, she doesn't know what she doesn't know and what she can't do. So she just followed the system. I was there coaching her. So I was shoving post-it notes under her nose and things like that. But what it required was for her simply to follow the structure. So we rehearsed her four times before she made that particular call, and they became a client.
And Marcus was keen to point out that no child labor laws were broken. He actually paid her a commission, and she gets a spiff every time somebody watches it on YouTube. So I've made it a point to cost you money, Marcus. Another thing Marcus is famous for, at least he's famous in my world, he's a man of great courage and creativity, and his latest endeavor has been to get on stage and do some stand-up comedy. So we thought in our program today, we're going to talk about why people are mad and how do we manage that process. So Marcus, take it away.
Mark Twain said it rather well, which is, when we remember we're all mad, the mysteries disappear and life stands explained. We all come from messed up, dysfunctional families. My favorite poem, I'm going to have to edit slightly, called This Be the Verse by Philip Larkin. They muck you up, your mum and dad. They may not mean to, but they do. They fill you with all the faults they had and they add some extra just for you. That kind of sums up the human condition. I'm not sure how many of you believe in evolution, but essentially, I have a view which is that we are basically chimps with egos and speech, and we haven't really evolved much in the last quarter of a million years because our ancestors, as primitive as they were, really had to use that great big brain that they got to make a conceptual leap, to see a piece of rock could be turned into a blade, and then that blade could be tied with the tendons of animals to a stick and they could make a spear. Nowadays, basically, we're two or three clicks away from the sum total of human knowledge via a smartphone.
Right.
And I think we've got dumber over the years rather than smarter. The majority of us tend to live and operate and work from a description of every dysfunctional relationship you can ever have called the drama triangle. Ego thrives on drama, Jim. And the drama triangle is an equilateral triangle on its sharp point. The bottom point is the victim. Now, what does the victim sound like?
Well, I'm guessing the victim sounds like, it's not my fault. I couldn't help it. Excuse.
Absolutely. Excuses and, why me? It's not fair. Okay?
Life's
and the other thing
there.
The victim sounds like is, save me, you do it. Yeah? Now, if you have salespeople who are victims, you will have an environment that is full of excuses, and the only thing that rolls uphill are excuses. You have a culture of blame. It's marketing's fault. It's management's fault. It's our pricing, our products fraying at the edges. Our competition's better, faster, cheaper. Yeah? Now, if you have that kind of culture, you're not going to grow your business. Then we have the persecutor. Now, the persecutor sounds like, you piece of, you always, you never. You're such a disappointment. And it comes with a jabby index finger and the pronoun you.
Yeah.
And the index finger stabs you in the face or the chest as it diminishes you at an identity level.
Mm.
It attacks who you are.
Yeah, it's the attacking. That's that attacking voice that's very critical, and it's your fault and you need to change.
Now, an environment where you have a persecuting manager creates a high degree of staff turnover. stifles initiative, stifles innovation, eliminates any possibility of risk-taking or entrepreneurship. People play it safe. They do the absolute minimum to not get into trouble.
Yeah.
Then you have the rescuer. Now, rescuing can be defined as helping without boundaries or permission. Very disempowering. It creates a culture of learned helplessness and upward delegation. The manager is run ragged. They encourage their top talent to leave and only the weak stay behind. So it's like, who is the guy from the gun lobby who said, by my cold dead hand?
I'm not sure who that is, but...
Oh, it was the one who played Moses.
Charlton Heston.
Was it Charlton Heston?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens is, all you're left with is the cold dead hand of the weak hanging onto your lifeboat, and they never let go, and they drag you down, yeah?
That's right.
Rescuers either help without boundaries or permission. No, I'll show you how, but let me do it. Or they're mollycoddling and permissive, so they tolerate non-performance. They won't confront the issue. They hate conflict, even constructive conflict.
Yeah.
And as a result, what they end up with is a very anodyne kind of culture. Now, persecutors and rescuers create an environment where there is no trust. They effectively become bottlenecks. The rescuer, because everything is being dumped upwards on them, they can't cope. And the persecutor, because no one will do anything unless they get their permission. They create resentment, fail to create any form of succession.
You said that a rescuer and a persecutor create an environment of what?
Lacking in trust.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is that all too often, we think that something is there or isn't there that may or may not be. So persecutors think that everyone's out to get them, that no one's competent. Rescuers think that no one can do it properly. They need to jump in because they need to be saved. Victims think that it's unfair, it's not them. And the problem is that they're looking at the wrong end of the problem always. The victim-persecutor-rescuer triangle is called the Kaufman or drama triangle. And ego thrives on drama, okay? Now, what that means is anytime anyone, you or someone else, adopts any one of those positions of victim, persecutor, and rescuer, it's your egos that have been hooked. And what's really interesting is that you will end up in a fight, a psychological gameplay, and you will swap positions. So I'm driving along and I'm running late for a meeting, yeah?
Yes.
A mother with 6 kids is trying to fill them all into the SUV, yeah?
Yeah.
And I'm waiting patiently and I'm indicating that I'm going to go in. I've got my flashes on. And she pulls out and someone else pulls into my space, okay?
Right.
And the first thing I do is I go into victim mode. I say, that's not fair. And
right.
I move into persecutor mode and I bang on their window. I've been waiting for the last 10 minutes. How dare you? And they get out and they happen to be a little bit taller and stronger looking than me. And we end up in a fight, okay? But then Jim comes along and he says, guys, peace, man. Yeah?
Yeah.
And we both turn on you and beat you up. And then the sirens come and we run away. Okay? And what happens is we end up swapping positions. I had a row with my wife, okay, without actually involving her. I was there on a Friday night in bed, and she told me she was going to decorate our living room the following day. And I'd had a hard week. I'd done 4 days of training. I was tired. I really wanted to watch the television. Do nothing. Anyway, so I kissed her goodnight. I did the smart thing. 11:36 the following day, I poked my head around the living room door because a little guilt trip kicked in. Being a bit of a lapsed Catholic, guilt still has hold over me.
Right.
And I poked my head around the door and I said, sweetheart, do you need some help? And she said, only if you want to. Now, what does that generally mean in a marriage?
If you know what's good for you, you'll say yes.
So that was the script that was running through my head.
Yeah, right.
So then, on my way to the garage, I went to get my bucket and brushes, and a voice in my head said, hang on a second, she's done this to me again. This isn't fair. I've had a really hard week. How did she rope me into this cockamamie plan of hers? The living room didn't need decorating. There was nothing wrong with it. I'll show her, I said. And then I go into the living room and I start pulling off tiny pieces of wallpaper with a little mutter under my breath and a storm cloud and lightning over my head. And after about 8 or 9 minutes, she looked across and she said, Marcus, you don't seem fully engaged in this activity. Is something wrong? And I said, no, you know.
I had a hard week and I'm tired and I thought it'd be nice to spend the day in bed. And she said, you know, when I said only if you want to, I meant only if you want to. I haven't seen you all week because you've been working hard and I thought it'd be nice to spend some time together. You just go upstairs, spend the day in bed, that's fine. And I managed to have a fight entirely without including her.
That is drama. That is so funny. Ego thrives on drama. So you used the term earlier, we get hooked. Explain what that means, getting hooked emotionally.
Okay. Well, one of the basic rules of transaction analysis that we teach in Sandler is that in order to feel okay about ourselves, we need to find someone who is more not okay than us. So the hook is often trying to achieve okayness. And you only have to look at us as a species. I mean, you know, this is a depressingly serious fact, that we are a species that routinely looks for not okayness in others, and we take it to extremes. Mm. You know, the genocide of Stalin and 20 million in Russia, Hitler, the Tutsis and the Hutus, the Serbians, the Khmer Rouge, okay? We look at the Aboriginals. We look at, you know, everywhere you look throughout mankind's history, we've found other people who are more not okay than us. In fact, there's a strong theory that British imperialism was a way of exporting misery. Because if you exported the misery to the colonies, then you didn't have riots in London, and you could continue your cushy little number going to Houses of Parliament and living in landed estates. And we only have to look at the kind of television programming that we are so addicted to. Soap operas, reality TV, dramas, and the news. The news is all about other people's misery.
Right. And we feel better when we hear that other people are miserable.
We do. We say, by the grace of God, go I. Thank goodness it's not me.
Right.
Yeah? So we spend our lives doing this all the time. David Sandler made a merry quip once, which is, have you ever seen a family going out to have a bad time?
I've been that family.
Absolutely, haven't we all? I've got three daughters, yeah? And, you know, I'm always the villain of the piece. My wife is never wrong, because obviously she is never wrong. And my kids think I'm an idiot, and they're right. Oscar Wilde said it rather well. He said, I couldn't believe how ignorant my father was when I was 14, and I couldn't believe how much he'd learned by the time I was 21. So I'm hoping at some point in the future there's some redemption for me, but I doubt it. Wherever we look, in sales teams, in management teams, in corporates, in small businesses, large businesses, government organizations, wherever you look, there's this conflict because we're not working towards common purpose.
My guest today is Marcus Kauke. Marcus, give your contact information in case there's somebody out there who'd like to reach out to you.
My email address is marcus.kauke, C-A-U-C-H-I, at sandler.com, and you can use that to connect with me on LinkedIn. My telephone number is +44 118 940 4150, and Twitter, I'm the_inquisitor, capital T, _I, and INQITOR.
Awesome. Next up, we're going to go behind the business, where we get to meet the people and hear the story behind local and regional businesses. I'm Idaho's Sandler trainer, Jim Stevens. If you'd like to hear more, visit our website at crossroads.sandler.com. We have all of our past programs there for you to access. For specific information, reach out to us at 208-429-9275. Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. Welcome to Behind the Business, where we get to meet the people and hear the story of local and regional business owners and leaders. In this segment, we take a look at the businesses' challenges and successes that they've had, and we learn from the life lessons of our participants. Today, my guest is Don Ryman. Don has written the book Reset, Harnessing Change, Fear, and Risk for an Extraordinary Life. And in your book, Don, you talk a lot about self-awareness, becoming aware of who you are so that you are willing to achieve what you want. So talk to us a little about that.
Right. Well, in the business world right now, last few years, there's been a popular concept about how much time you spend working in your business versus how much time you spend working on your business. Well, I think before you can do that successfully, you have to spend that time working on yourself. And most of us have a really hard time doing what I call the hard personal work, where we're, you know, I use the phrase mind mirror, looking into the mirror of the mind to really who see we are, and creates what I call glare gaps, where because there's something there that's so bright, like sun reflecting off of a mirror, that we really don't want to look at it. And so it tends to blind us.
And I think even blinded to the point that we may be totally oblivious.
Correct.
Of some of those things that are just blind spots in our lives. How do other people play into the ability for us to be self-aware?
Well, I think if you start paying attention, you start picking up signals from other people. But sometimes we tend to think, oh, well, that's just them, or that's, no, that you know, they're all wet. That doesn't apply
to me. We disqualify it.
Yeah, we disqualify it. But I'm going to say more importantly that I think there's things, you know, the challenge is when we're working on ourselves is we both have negative and positive self-talk. So there's the challenge there to start determining, wait a minute, is this a valid self-criticism or is this a negative self-talk that I've got something that's causing me to think this way and it's holding me back as opposed to helping me?
Yeah, I think that negative self-talk is a cancer. And I'm the kind of guy that the glass is just half empty. So I find my self-talk can be very debilitating if I'm not aware of it. And so I struggle to stay aware. Some suggestions?
Well, one, I was talking to an individual the other day that was making a pretty big decision, and I simply asked them, are you making this decision because you're moving away from something or towards something? And I think the key to this is saying and turning again into the positive, where instead of I'm making this move or making this change because I want to get away from something, as opposed to saying I'm doing this because I want to achieve or get to a different position. Because so oftentimes the things we want to get away from, if we don't analyze what those are, they're going to go with us.
Yeah, yeah. And I might get out of the frying pan, but I'm going to get right back in the fire. Right. Don Ryman's my guest today. Don's the author of Reset, Harnessing Change, Fear, and Risk for an Extraordinary Life. Don, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
You can reach me at 208-345-9944, 208-345-9944, or at info@echelongroup.com.
We'll be back to the Sandler Training Hour just after this. And welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm the president and CEO of Sandler Training for Idaho, Jim Stevens. Each week, I invite a Sandler trainer from all around the world to discuss strategies to improve behavior, attitude, and techniques using the proven methodologies from the world-renowned and highly successful Sandler training system. My guest this week is Marcus Kauke. Marcus is from just west of London. Did I get that right?
That's right.
In a place called Reading, England. Glad to have you with us, Marcus. In the previous segment, we've been talking about the drama triangle. Marcus had a couple of points that he made that I just thought were outstanding. He pointed out that ego thrives on drama and that there are three primary components in drama, which is the rescuer, the persecutor, and the victim. And one thing you said, Marcus, that I had not thought of before is that the rescuer and the persecutor create an environment of lacking trust. There's a real bottleneck there. So if you would, give our listeners a summary of the basic things we talked about in the previous segment.
Well, the drama triangle represents every dysfunctional relationship you can or will ever have in life, in families, in work, in sales. And all of them, all three positions of victim, persecutor, and rescuer are diminishing to the identity of anyone who's involved on the triangle. We tend to swap positions around the triangle. So we go from victim to persecutor. We feel hard done by. So we defend. And in defending, it sounds like we're attacking. They hear that we're attacking them, so they feel hurt. They defend. It feels like an attack. And you end up in World War III.
Yeah.
Rescuers have a position which is that they're trying to help. It's generally well-intentioned, but the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And so they disempower by creating learned helplessness. They end up being persecuted, and their watchword, their cry, is, I was only trying to help, when someone moves into the persecutor mode.
Right.
And as a result of that, we end up in these broken, dysfunctional relationships where we're out of control and we're emotionally attacked. And we tend to get stuck in our past or worry about the future. If we're stuck in our past, then what we're doing is we're reaching back into history. We call that reach back and afterburn. Now, if we're reaching back into the past, that's where we collect stamp. It's where we go back to our old past hurt. You know, if you were ever bullied at school, I'm betting at some point in your not so distant past, you had a flashback and then you felt all that anger and misery all right. over again. And you reached back into the past and you dragged that emotion into the present.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the person who bullied you or the person you had that fight with probably has never thought of you again. And you may as well be dead for all that.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And we carry all this baggage all the time. We're surrounded by it. We're obsessed by it in our television programming, viewing pleasure. You know, we watch soap operas. That's all about other people's misery. In the UK, we have a soap opera called EastEnders. And as Christmas approaches, the trailers get more and more depressing. There's everything from murder, adultery, incest, you know, being locked up in prison, car crashes, being buried or burnt alive, all sorts of horrific things. And I guess it's to try and placate people who are feeling miserable so that they can watch the programming and say, well, you know, at least I haven't got things as bad as that. And because for us to feel okay, we generally need to find someone who's more not okay than us.
And I think, as you mentioned earlier, this really is the human condition. In fact, one of Marcus's favorite quotes is from Mark Twain, "When we remember we are all mad, the mystery disappears and life stands explained." And I think that's one of the things, Marcus, that really is empowering about understanding transactional analysis and the drama triangle through the Sandler paradigm. We start to understand that the argument, the dysfunction is really maybe self-generated, but it's also very self-limiting. So what are some of the strategies required to help take people from drama to empowerment?
You know, I'm delighted you asked me that question, because I was wondering how I can weave this one in. But okay, get a pen and write down the Buddhist mantra for happiness, which comes in three parts, okay? Part one, never complain. Part two, about anything. Part three, even to myself, brackets, even in thought. Now, your mission, should you choose to accept it over the next 66 days, because that's how long it takes to create a habit, is you're going to take those 3x5 or 6x8 index cards, and you're going to carry one with you every day, and you're going to divide it up, and you're going to turn it into landscape format, divide it up into 7 columns, one for every day of the week. So today is Thursday, so you do it the day you start, and you go through to Wednesday of next week. The rule is this: every time you whine, moan, complain, judge, feel hard done by, you have to tally it. You know what I mean by tally? You draw, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines and then the crossbar. So you're going to tally every single time you complain in any way, shape, or form. And you notice I said judge, okay? The basis of prejudice is judgment. You're walking down the street, ladies, and you spot someone in a red coat or they're wearing stripes and you say, oh, she shouldn't really be wearing that. Or you're driving along, gents, and someone cuts you up and you flip them the finger. Or you're in the office and someone doesn't say good morning to you and you say to them, you say to yourself, yeah, well, they're a bit unfriendly. Whatever it takes, any form of complaint, moaning, griping, doesn't matter. What you do is you tally. And the rule is, you may do nothing deliberate to change your behavior. This is an exercise in awareness raising.
Ah.
I started doing this on a Wednesday, and I had 29 tallies. Incidentally, I'm delighted to say that I'm by nowhere near the worst. I have had clients, when I've set this exercise, who had as many as 155 in a day.
Oh,
so 29 on the first day. Now, what was interesting, on the second day, I only had 9. And what I was doing was I was starting to go into one, but then I realized I was doing it, and before I complained, I caught myself and I could just stop because I raised my awareness level. Now, what was even better was on Friday, I only had 3, and my wife and children, but all of them, said to me, Daddy, are you all right? So that was interesting. Now, on day 4, 17, and on day 5, 22, day 6, 3, day 7, 3. So where was I on day 4 and 5?
Intensely at work?
Nope. It was the weekend.
Oh, it was a weekend. At home, having to paint with your wife and
kids.
With
my wife and my children. These are people I'm meant to love. These are the people I have the greatest attachment to.
Yeah, you're making me feel very sorry for my family. We all work together. And I think my first day when I do this, I'm probably going to be in the 100-plus category. I might have to have 3 or 4 cards.
The depressing thing is that when I realized what was happening at home, it got worse because I was trying not to so hard. And they were leaving stuff lying around. I tripped over their shoes. They, you know, left stuff on the floor. They treated me with the usual contempt, all that kind of stuff. And I got angry. And so every time I got angry, it made it worse.
Right.
Yeah. Now, what was interesting was the moment I went, I was about to say home, what I really meant, that was a bit of Freudian, the moment I got to the office, I was calm because I could detach myself from the outcome. One of the key things that we teach in Sandler is never become emotionally attached to the outcome of any sale. And I've taken that to heart. Buy from me, don't buy from me. I really don't care. I want your business, but I really don't need it. And I'm in the lucky position of having, over the years, built up a strong process for building my pipeline up. So I get roughly 6 to 12 referrals a week.
Wow.
I'm very picky about who I take on. This year, we're 400% up on last year already.
Wow.
It's just a joy. You know, I don't have to work very hard, and the business comes to me. So I can now say no to a lot more business than I ever have. If people don't want to work on my terms, I can say thanks, but no thanks. As a salesperson, if I have a weak or empty sales pipeline, I need every piece of business, and I'm attached. If you're in the drama triangle, it's all about attachment. It's worrying about the future. It's being stuck in the past and reliving old past hurt. So which salesperson do you know does not have baggage that they drag with them everywhere that goes on about, you know, being nearly fired or being fired, of having a bad month or quarter, having a weak or empty pipeline, being dressed down by their boss and embarrassed at the sales meeting? And so what they do is they pad out their pipeline with maybes and hopers and call me backs and, you know, the timing's wrong and all that kind of rubbish, yeah?
Yeah.
If you want to fix your head and be in a strong position mentally, psychologically, so that you can say no to bad business, fill your pipeline up. I teach my clients to do two things in terms of leading indicators. They have to do the behavior of getting 5 unique, effective conversations with decision makers every single working day. And a unique effective is they get past the gatekeeper. No one in that company has spoken to anyone from that company in the last 12 to 24 months. They get past the gatekeeper through to the decision maker, and they contract with the decision maker that they will deliver a 30-second commercial, and at the end of that 30-second commercial, that person will decide whether they'll invite them in or not. Now, if they do 5 of those a day, but what I'm finding typically is that if you do 5 unique effective calls a day, within about a 6 to 7 month period, your pipeline for a professional services kind of business like ours will be 3 times bigger than it needs to be for you to hit your target. In 12 months, it'll be 5 times bigger. So you will go into the following year with 500% pipeline against your target. Now, what does that do to your psyche? That then puts you in a position where you can walk away, where you have a choice. Yeah. That's the only reason you prospect. You prospect for choice.
You're not feeling desperate. You're not feeling anxiety because you've built that great pipeline. I'm Jim Stevens, and my guest today is Marcus Kauke. Marcus, give your contact information in case one of our listeners would like to reach out and connect with you.
My telephone number is +44 118 940 4150. My email address, marcus.kauke@sandler.com. And I have a YouTube channel, which is https://tinyurl.com, YouTube Marcus Kauke. And Kauke is C-A-U-C-H-I.
And I'd encourage you to go to that YouTube channel. Marcus has a lot of video there, very amusing and also very insightful. Up next is another segment of Behind the Business, followed by one of my favorite segments, which is Entrepreneur Radio. This is where we get to learn more about the real heroes of economy and society, independent business owners and leaders in the Treasure Valley. If you'd like to share your story, call us at 208-429-9275. I'm Idaho's CEO of Sandler Training, Jim Stevens. If you'd like to hear more shows, visit our website at crossroads.sandler.com. We have all of our past programs there for you to access. And if you want specific information, you can reach me at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, where you find power in reinforcement. Welcome back to Behind the Business, where we get to meet the people and hear the story of local and regional business owners and leaders. In this segment, we get to take a peek behind the success and challenges of some local folks. And my guest today is a client of mine, Don Ryman. Don is the founder of the Echelon Group, and he's an author of the book Reset, Harnessing Change, Fear, and Risk for an Extraordinary Life. And Don is a certified master NLP coach and trainer. So neuro-linguistic programming is really about recognizing the connectivity, I think, my layman's definition would be the connectivity between my thinking and my outward actions. So getting that synchronization between what I think and what I do requires me to know how to think. And in NLP, it really is somewhat, I think, the analysis of how do we think. So give us your thoughts on the importance of understanding ourselves if we're going to really be effective at helping others.
Well, I think it's critical to pay attention to the things that we say and do. I always, in my business, one of the things my staff gets frustrated with is they'll bring me something, especially if it's got numbers or something, and I'll look at the sheet and say, there's a mistake there, or this number can't be right. And I've given some thought to that, and I think it's probably one of the biggest things that we can apply in our lives is the inconsistencies or the incongruities pop out to me. So if there is something in your life, you're saying one thing, doing another, you're telling your employees, do this way, but you're not. And quite frankly, I have to tell you that periodically, even though I'm the CEO of the company, I fire myself because I start looking and saying, the way I'm functioning right now, I have a lot of latitude as a business owner.
Right.
And I look at it and say, if I was paying somebody and as an employee and they were functioning the way I'm functioning, would I continue to pay them or would I fire them? And
wow.
Periodically, I've had to, you know, basically look at myself and say, you're fired. And I went so far as to tell my team one time that I was going on a 3-week vacation, but it said when I got back, I was going to introduce them to their new CEO.
Did they like the new one better?
Yes.
Yeah. That is a vacation that did you well.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of funny. Even the other day, they were referred to, well, the old Don would have done this.
Oh, really? That's awesome. Yeah, that's a real compliment, too, when the people who know you the best, because they see you at work, recognize that change.
Right.
Give your contact information, Don, in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
You can reach me at 208-345-9944 or at info@echelongroup.com.
Next up, we have Entrepreneur Radio, where we hear the story firsthand of local and regional business owners and managers, how they've created success and endured some of the challenges that are inherent in building a company that lasts. If you or your business would like to be on the program, please reach out to me at 208-429-9275. We'll invite you into our studio, help you tell your story, and give you a mouthpiece for sharing your successes with the Treasure Valley. I'm Jim Stevens. We're going to be back with more of Behind the Business after the next segment. And welcome to Entrepreneur Radio. I'm the host, Jim Stevens. Each week, we invite entrepreneurs and business owners from all over the Treasure Valley to share with us some of their strategies, tactics, and ideas in hopes of learning some lessons from other people's successes. I'm really thrilled to have with me Casey Betzold. He's with Snake River Shooting Products and Consulting. Casey, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me about your business. I understand you don't just have one. You're a chronic entrepreneur. You create businesses for fun.
We do, and they all kind of tie together. So we'll kind of talk through them here and how they stick together. So I'm from Idaho. I grew up here. I live in Emmett. I live up north now in Post Falls. Our business is based out of multiple locations, but a lot of things going on here in the Idaho state, which is cool. And I'm going to start with kind of the thing that ties everything together, which is the Antares Alliance. Antares is Latin for pillar, prop, or support. So think about it like a pillar of patriots. So I was an Air Force guy. I spent 6 years in the Air Force and have had that military veteran support structure close to my heart for a lot of years. And our businesses, our other businesses all tie into a veteran concept of supporting vets and or first responders. And so with a group of other companies, we joined together and built this networking concept of 44 companies and growing that all have a tangible support structure for veterans and first responders.
So now you say a network, it implies that there's a group of you with a common focus, but you've got 44 different businesses. Help me understand the
construct. So they kind of grew out of the outdoor industry. So our other businesses tie into the shooting industry, shooting sports, ammunition, firearms, optics, that sort of thing. So we're heavy in that on the Antares Alliance because that's kind of where we grew out of. But we have companies that are service companies as well. We have media companies and we have graphic design. We have web development. We have credit card processing. We have other things that these businesses all need to work together. So think about what a big conglomeration corporation would have access to services-wise. We've brought those people in as part of the network. So we're all independent companies. ways, but we all are working together. And that glue is the first responders and veterans piece that ties us all together.
And so your mission or goal is really to provide resources for veterans that give them a special price point?
Yes. Yeah, that's a part of it. The biggest part of it is that let's say that we have a product that we donate a percentage of the proceeds to a veterans foundation. So in one of our other businesses, Snake River Shooting Products, which is actually based out of Emmett, Idaho, we manufacture the line of Team Never Quit ammunition in partnership with lone survivor, retired Navy SEAL Marcus Luttrell. There's a movie made about him several years ago where Mark Wahlberg played Marcus Luttrell.
Oh, yeah.
And so we built his ammo line. His ammo line, Team Never Quit, the brand was built just to support the Lone Survivor Foundation, which is a foundation that Marcus founded for vets coming back and dealing with PTSD or lost limbs and working through the mental state of getting back into plugged into civilian life. So,
are you actually manufacturing ammo?
Yep.
Or are you just a reseller of ammo?
Well, both, but we manufacture the Team Never Quit line outright. So that's our project that we manufacture in partnership with a few other companies, the Bullet Company and a case manufacturing company. So we work together to build that product, and about 40% of the profits of that go to the Lone Survivor Foundation.
So that's awesome.
You take that and you tie that together with a number of other companies that are out there doing something similar. There's other foundations out there like the Navy SEAL Foundation or the Special Operations Wounded Warriors, and we have companies that are mixed into the group that feed into those foundations. So that's our common denominator, and that's what we're all working together to support each other's brands, talk about each other's brands, cross promote. I'm standing here talking about, you know, all the companies in the Antares Alliance right now today, and others are doing that as well.
And that Interior Alliance, is there a website that people could go to see the 44 members?
There is, yeah. Antares is A-N-T-E-R-I-S, so AntaresAlliance.com is the website. All 44 companies are shown in there in the directory. There's a tab called the Alliance Directory, and it will talk about what kind of companies they are, whether they're service companies or whether they're manufacturers of products. About 27 of them are manufacturers, and we have ammo and optics and firearms and targets and and just a whole bunch of products in there in the outdoor side.
And it's not just for people who are veterans or first responders. You're open for any trade from any citizen.
Absolutely. So the Pillar of Patriots concept, Antares meaning pillar and being that Pillar of Patriots, is that it doesn't have to be veteran first responder owned, although bunches of the companies are. They just really need to be a patriotic company. We know that this state, for one, but the United States is filled with those companies. And we don't care which line of work they come from, whether they're a furniture company or a tugboat company or what they are. But they come in and they see value in this. This is about cross promotion and growing each other's products.
And are each of the members keen on donating to some of the target associations or affiliations?
They are, and they have to be, actually, to join. So to be part of the alliance, they have to be actively supporting in a tangible, measurable way. So beyond just saying, hey, we support veterans, there's a lot of great companies out there that do that, but they have to show us how they're doing that. And if they say, hey, we're supporting a charity, then we also vet their charity to make sure that the money, when it goes to that charity, is actually going where it's supposed to go.
And you have any idea how much money on an annual basis is donated through the effort of the 44 companies in Antares?
Well, we're in the first year, so we're only a few months old, and it's growing really fast because all these companies see value in working together to achieve more than we could by ourselves. So we're actually looking forward to the end of the year where we can come up with that first year's number and see
how much money tangible is.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So tell us a little bit about your company. Now, you're a family-owned business. Give us the overview.
Yeah, so Snake River Shooting Products, that's the other business you have there on the card, is the company that started out as a distribution company based out of Emmett. And we were the ones that went out and worked with Marcus to put together the project to do his ammunition line. So we manufactured the ammo under the Snake River Shooting Products company. It's a consulting company, so that's one of our consulting projects. And then we got into manufacturing that way. And then also as part of that is the Tactical Squirrel subscription box. And Tactical Squirrel is a box that goes out every month. We actually built that around the Team Never Quit ammo concept, actually before Antares Alliance existed. And the idea was to get a box of ammo out to people to try. And so we started working with other veteran companies and first responder companies out there that either are owned or supporting those entities, and put products in the box every month that go out to people. So lots and lots of subscription boxes out there. So a lot of people subscribe to them, but we have one that's built around ammo. Then we have a non-ammo version. We just launched a version for the Tactigal.
So what's the membership to belong to the Tactical Squirrel?
So the ladies box that we just launched is $34.99 a month. The basic ammo box, which is a little bit smaller, fewer items, is $49.99, and the premium box is $99.99.
And what's included in it?
Anything from ammo to knives to tactical gear to t-shirts to hats to stuff that's, you know, in that tactical side of the
game. And then it's something that's sent out. You get a new box every month?
Every single month you get a new box.
That's interesting.
Yep, and people can cancel whenever they want. We love to have them come and try it out. It's a way to get ammo every month. There's a couple ammo-focused subscription boxes out there, but none that are mixing tactical gear. And the difference with our box subscription program is that it's a as much as possible, the vast majority of the products are from companies that are either veteran-owned or supporting.
And so if you're a member, you submit the weapons that you have so that you're getting ammo specific to your weapons?
They do. They let us know which caliber they'd like, what their t-shirt size is, their belt size, because you never know what you're going to get every month.
Yeah.
And we try to personalize the box as much as possible for the person that's getting it. And that's been doing really well. And so we've actually used that concept to work with the Alliance members to get as many of their products out to the market as possible. Because the idea is to give people a taste of their products and drive people back to the brand. So all of it ties together from an entrepreneurial standpoint of branding, growing a brand, and figuring out how small up-and-coming companies can go out there and get a lot of coverage. And that's the idea of all of us working together.
Yeah, it sounds like if you're an outdoor sports person, man or woman, it's like Christmas once a month.
It is. It's absolutely Christmas.
What Better am I going to get this
for
month?
For the person that's really hard to buy for, it's fantastic for them.
So you can buy a subscription for your father who's impossible to buy for because he always buys his own stuff.
Right,
and then
absolutely.
Once a month, he's overwhelmed. That's awesome. That's
sure.
A very great idea. Well, give your contact information, Casey, in case somebody out there would like to reach out to you and hear a little bit more about your vision, maybe even become a member of your alliance.
So from Ann Terry's Alliance, it's info@AnnTerry'sAlliance.com. We'll get an email into our management team. We've got 9 board members made up of 9 different CEOs within the group, from former military to former police officers to just patriots that are working together to get the word out there. You know, let us know any questions that you have. We actually have an individual membership basis for the Alliance as well for anybody that supports the cause. And if they're just a common everyday patriot, they don't have to be a veteran or first responder. They'll get a coin and a t-shirt and a sticker pack and a patch, and then they'll get a discount on all of the Alliance products actually as well. So anybody that wants to check that out, it's all on AnnTerry'sAlliance.com.
And if somebody wanted to buy ammo?
Oh, that's really easy. So SnakeRiverShootingProducts.com has a list of all the dealers carrying the products. Cabela's is carrying the products. Brownells, Lucky Gunner, some of the big names out there are carrying the Team Never Quit ammunition. And they can get a hold of us the same way through the Alliance.
And they can buy direct from you only through joining your Tactical Squirrel membership?
Tactical Squirrel, they'll get it direct that way. If they were an individual Alliance member, wanted to shop on the members page, which is exclusive only to members, then they can
cool.
get the product there. Generally, we manufacture and sell out to the distribution and dealer base that move the products.
So where does the name Tactical Squirrel come from?
It was a brainchild of a group of us trying to come up with something that would catch people's attention.
Well, it certainly does. You accomplished your mission.
It's been fun.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Casey, for being a part of the program today. We're going to be back with more of the Sandler Training Hour just after we hear from Behind the Business, just after this. And welcome back to Behind the Business. I'm Jim Stevens, your host. My guest today is Don Ryman. Don is the owner and founder, CEO of the Echelon Group. Don, give a quick overview of what your company does.
Well, the easiest thing I would say that Echelon Group works with employers for solutions anywhere they interact with their employees. So everything from their group insurance plans to their retirement plan to payroll and HR information systems to HR support, and then quite frankly, to actually do financial education for the management team. But one of the things separates, we'll actually provide it for the employees who need it more so.
And I've had the honor of interacting with Don's staff. And I would say, in my perspective, is your team almost becomes a part of your client's team because you provide services like consulting, it almost seems to me.
Right. Yeah, we look at almost like instead of being our clients, that we're actually partners with them and are almost employees of theirs.
Yeah. So they literally call you for outsourcing things that they might not have the resources to handle themselves. So we've been talking about Don's book, which is Reset, Harnessing Change, Fear, and Risk for an Extraordinary Life. The challenge with risk, Don, is that we don't know what will happen. I'm going to take a risk and it may or may not work. I mean, I might really want the outcome, but I may not take that risk because I'm too fearful. Talk to us a little bit about how do I face that fear and embrace it as a catalyst for change.
Well, I'm going to translate it over something that I learned about pain in itself from physical pain from martial arts training in the past, and is instead of reacting to the pain, you actually focus on it, breathe through it, and almost like you're going to try and intensify it with a really acute concentration. And it's amazing. It's hard to explain, but, and I would say the same thing with risk. When you're feeling that sense of fear, then you've got to start focusing on it and digging it apart. You know, why is my heart beating faster? Why am I getting anxiety about this? Because if you can peel that onion back and start looking at it and saying, okay, there's a sensation and things that go with that, the feeling of fear, but underneath it, you can uncover what the real issue is. And then you've got the information to be able to, as you know, I've mentioned before, to be able to start analyzing and calculating, okay, what's the likelihood of that happening and what can I do to minimize that?
Right. Once I've identified what the risk is, I can also preempt what some of the roadblocks. And I think many of the roadblocks that we face are self-imposed. Yeah. It's having beliefs and really a vocabulary that may be self-destructive. Talk to us about that.
Well, I would say for a lot of people, probably the biggest fear is the fear of failure. And especially if you're driven and you have a lot of success. So the idea of failing, and I state this specifically in the book, you know, don't buy into the platitude that there's no such thing as failure. There's a lot of it. But there's a big difference between failing and being a failure. Right. So the key there is I look at, you know, when I fail, anytime I fail at something, and quite frankly, some of my biggest successes, I kind of failed at, but it was still more than I'd ever accomplished in that area before. So I didn't make my goal. So yes, I failed, but it was still a great step forward.
That's
for me.
Awesome. I had never thought about that, but that is so true. I'm flashing back in my mind to some of my successes that really were failures, but it turned out far better than anything I'd done heretofore.
Right.
Don, give your contact information in case someone would like to reach out to you.
You can reach me at 208-345-9944 or at info@echelongroup.com.
And I would encourage you, listeners, get on Amazon.com, buy the book Reset, Harnessing Change, Fear, and Risk for an Extraordinary Life. I think you'll find it challenging, inspiring, and I almost think a bit of a wake-up call to recognize that maybe I've settled into some mediocrity that I don't need to tolerate, and perhaps there is something I could do to change. We're going to be back for the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour just after this. Welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm the president and CEO of Sandler Training for Idaho, Jim Stevens. Each week, I invite a keynote Sandler trainer from around the world to discuss strategies required to improve behavior, attitude, and technique using the proven methodologies from the world-renowned and highly effective Sandler Training System. My guest this week is Marcus Kauke. Marcus is from just west of London, Reading, England. Marcus has been talking to us about the human condition, and he's been using the drama triangle to help us better understand how we get hooked into drama. Maybe to kick it off, Marcus, so if we think about the drama triangle, there's got to be a system, a process, a methodology that will help us break that model and change it. And Marcus is going to introduce us to the concept called the winner's triangle. Take it away, Marcus.
Okay. My favorite philosopher, Bruce Lee, was asked, Mr. Lee, what's the best way to avoid a punch? And he said, be somewhere else. And the somewhere else from the drama triangle is what we would call the winner's triangle. And instead of being a victim, you become vulnerable. And vulnerability is a strength, it's a sign of courage, because your average person doesn't put themselves in a position where they may be hurt. They try and shy away from that. And it takes courage and bravery. It comes from the Latin vulnerabile, which means to make yourself woundable and do it anyway. Now, a Roman legionary would rip off his armor and go into battle with the Goths without any armor as a sign of courage. And that's what vulnerability is. It's
wow.
Where you put yourself out there. There's a danger that you might be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And it involves you saying things like, I'm so sorry. It's entirely my fault. I'm to blame. Can you forgive me? Okay?
Right.
Instead of being a rescuer, you're nurturing or empathic. As a result of that, you acknowledge the other person. So you make sure that they're kept intact. You keep working to ensure that you're not the problem. And you validate them. You value them. And the persecutor, instead of being aggressive, is assertive. And we draw the winner's triangle on its flat face rather than on the point, because assertive vulnerability, or being vulnerably assertive, is incredibly powerful. And it's something that very few people do. So imagine you're running late and you operate out of the drama triangle, and it sounds something like this. It's not fair. I did my best. The sun out to me all the way around the houses. Look, I'm trying. Yeah?
Right, right.
Attractive or unattractive?
Yeah, not very attractive.
Right. Okay. On the other hand, you go vulnerable, nurturing, assertive. Jim, I am so sorry. It's entirely my fault. I misjudged the traffic and I left far too late. You must be upset with me. Can you forgive me? Or shall we just cancel the meeting and chalk it up to experience?
Yeah, that vulnerability is immensely powerful.
Absolutely. I mean, when was the last time someone asked you forgiveness and you said, no, get out?
Right.
Yeah, because asking for forgiveness really takes courage.
That's awesome. So let's take a practical application. In the very first segment, Marcus took us through a self-inflicted wound in the drama triangle after a hard 4 days of training, and he baited himself into helping his wife, which brought out both the victim, the persecutor, and the rescuer. So take us back to that story, and what would have changed had you moved into that winner's triangle?
I'd have been authentic. The winner's triangle is all about being authentic. So instead of volunteering and not really meaning it and then resenting it, then trying to pick a fight with my wife in order to score a point, which is essentially a fast track to divorce.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, why do you think people get divorced? You know, becoming complacent, then they start picking fights with one another and trying to score points and prove that they're right. And every time I score a point against you, you give me a minus one and I give myself a plus one. And now we're 2 points apart, points apart, 6, 8, 10. And before you know it, I've become completely overdrawn in my emotional bank account with you, and you can't stand to even the sight of me. Now, an alternative version of that would have been, sweetheart, I'd love to help you. I'm really tired and I feel awful that I can't help you on this occasion. Do you mind if I spend the morning in bed and maybe help you later on this afternoon when I'm feeling more refreshed?
And that's what she was encouraging anyway. So much of drama is made up in our own mind. We create our own version of reality that often is not even close to the real story that's being told in the other person's mind.
So one of my favorite Sandler rules, always makes me giggle, is if your foot is hurting, you're probably standing on your own toe. Now, there is my third favorite website on the planet is called despair.com. When you go into many offices, there are those frustratingly kicked posters that talk about, eagles dare to soar, and it's lonely on the last mile, and all of that positive mental attitude guff, which I'm not a big fan of. Anyway, they used to have a poster which said dysfunction, and it had a picture of the chain snapping in two. And the caption ran, have you ever considered in all of your dissatisfying relationships, the one constant is you?
That's awesome.
My recommendation is, if you have a problem, look in the mirror. If you have a problem with your selling, with your management, with your marriage, with your children, start by looking in the mirror. Because 99 times out of 100, in my miserable experience, it's my fault. And that's the next mantra that requires you to be vulnerable, nurturing, and assertive, which is you take responsibility. I am responsible for how I feel and how I choose to respond. In the drama triangle, it's a reaction. It's a very reptilian, primitive response. Primitive reaction. It's a reflex.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In winner's triangle, you choose your response. You're operating from your rational brain. You operate from a position of win-win or no deal. If you're operating, I call it above the line, below the line. I have a model that I've cobbled together by integrating a number of different brilliant pieces of creative thinking. You know, talent creates and genius steals. This is my moment of genius. And part of this is putting the drama triangle above the line. And so you're putting your head above the parapet. You're ending up in a fight. It's a noisome, unpleasant place, full of attachment and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Below the line is all about being present. The winner's triangle is all about being present, mindful. You're choosing your response instead of reacting like some wild creature, some demented madman. You are choosing the right response, which is to focus on the win-win or no deal. You keep the other person intact. You take personal responsibility. A phenomenal book. It's the book I wish I'd written, if I'm being honest. I'm envious that he wrote it first. It's called Just Listen by Mark Goulston. And in there, he talks about a great way to apologize. It's essentially working around the winner's triangle. And you're trying to give someone difficult feedback. And it goes along, and you could be a parent, parent, you could be a manager. Jim, I'm disappointed in myself. I feel terrible. I've let you down. I haven't communicated clearly to you. We've reached this position because I haven't been clear. I'm sorry. Can you forgive me?
Wow. Yeah, that's powerful.
Are you going to let her get away with that? Defend my position. And I say, well, you know, if the place was a bit tidier. And her child gets hooked and turns to her mother, who then has a little voice in her head saying, don't let him get away with that. You've got to protect yourself. To which her response is, and if you weren't such a slob, and then World War III breaks out.
That is a great strategy, Marcus. It really shows that if we take time to disarm someone rather than persecute them, they'll facilitate discovery and change on their own rather than us having to mandate change only to be disappointed later. Hey, we're running out of time. My guest today has been Marcus Kauke. Marcus, let the listeners know how they could get in touch with you.
My telephone number is +44 118 940 4150. My email address, marcus.kauke@sandler.com. And I have a YouTube channel, which is https://tinyurl.com. YouTube, Marcus Kauke. And Kauke is C-A-U-C-H-I.
Thank you, Marcus. It's been great having you on our program. I'm Idaho's CEO of Sandler Training, Jim Stevens. Thank you so much for inviting me into your world. Our calling is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. Challenges like living with good enough, trapped in the comfort zone of the status quo, ignoring marketplace rejection, resulting in decreasing market share, accepting chaos and volatility in your business and customer relationships, or simply learning the hard way through trial and error, hoping you'll eventually get it figured out. If you're ready to give up the insanity of doing the same thing, expecting different results, call me at 208-429-9275, and we will schedule a time to meet and decide if you're ready to do the hard work required for change. Have a great weekend, and remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it.